This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good Friday morning, Amy Jacobson here, Dan Proft on his way in, making his way gingerly to the studio this morning. Pretty cold out there. Oh, got to heat up that car, that's for sure. About 12 degrees, and it's going to be a nasty weekend. And it's also going to be a nasty weekend because the deal is not done. The CTU CPS could not get it done, even though Mayor Lightfoot yesterday said enough is enough. I'm not coming back here. They've got to come to the table.
CTU has asked for more, particularly for those individuals who don't fall into Category 1 or Category 2, but have someone in their household that has an underlying medical condition. We absolutely understand the concerns there. We have put a plan on the table for accommodations and for vaccines for that category, which is about 2,000. That's been on the table for days.
312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. She put her foot down and saying that we're not going to be back here. We're not going to be back here on Sunday night because, you know, there's no school today for CPS. And guess what happened, Mike Scott? No deal was reached. CTU came back with a counter proposal around 11 o'clock last night. We don't know what's in it. The counter proposal could just say, we're not budging. We don't know what it's on the counter proposal.
Not exactly. The sticking points, though, mayoral insiders say the sticking points remain the same. They're over COVID vaccinations for staff. They're over testing both at home and at work, work from home accommodations and health metrics. It now boils down to, if we're reading this correctly, nothing that has to do with students per se. It all has to do with the teachers themselves. And a lot of it, it appears, are work-from-home accommodations, especially, as you mentioned, the what happens if I have someone who might be exposed.
Right, but here's the thing. I know doctors and nurses, and I'm sure you do too, and CTA employees and grocery store workers who have a family member who might have asthma or hypertension or high blood pressure. And that's the thing. There's one guy, he's got, you know, sporadic high blood pressure. And his wife is worried that she might come home and bring him the COVID. But no other group has done what the union is doing. And not only here in Chicago, but of course in New York and in San Francisco. So I asked the question, since San Francisco mayor is suing their school district, might that happen here?
Mayor, from Amy Jacobson, she is asking, so I know that you've said several times here today about today's the day, but if there is no deal by tomorrow, will you pursue what the city of San Francisco is doing and sue the school district? If not, when will real consequences?
So, apples and oranges. In San Francisco, the mayor has no authority over the school district. So I have no intention of suing Dr. Jackson and her colleagues.
Oh, the laugh. Laughing. They think that that's so funny. 312-642-5600. Turnkey.proanswerline, 64636, type in DA, then a quick question. And I'm heartbroken today because CPS, which has one of the most premier basketball leagues, and, you know, we feed the NBA stars, okay, found out yesterday we're not going to have a girls or boys basketball season. Why? Because CTU and CPS could not reach an agreement. So it's over for tens of thousands of kids in CPS that play winter sports. And not only that, cheer, bowling, swimming, because the season started last Monday were tryouts.
Mm-hmm. That's
we
are
supposed to have games next week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't games? Have games if the agreement. So the IHSA gave us approval. The agreement, the paper that needs to be signed is on Janice Jackson's desk, and she will not sign it or move on that until teachers get back to some form of in-person learning. And that is bull jive because she is hurting tens of thousands of kids. And they need help, and they need something to look forward to and something to do. You know, Michael Bloomberg, we don't always agree with him, but he was on MSNBC yesterday, and he called out the teachers union. You've got to hear this.
I think that what we're doing to poor kids is a disgrace. These poor kids are not in school. They will never recover from this, and they had a bad education experience anyways. We have not had good schools for poor kids. And this now is just so much worse. The president has to stand up to the unions.
The teachers' say, unions?
Teachers, yeah. Yes, the teachers' unions. You know, the teachers say, well, I don't want to go back because it's dangerous. We have a lot of city and state and federal employees who run risks. That's part of the job. You run risks to help America, to help your state, to help your city, to help your family. And there's just no reason not to have the schools open. The virtual classes are a joke. It is worse than a joke. Poor people don't have iPads. They don't have Wi-Fi. They don't have somebody at home to sit during the day and force the child to pay attention. And without that, the virtual learning just does not exist. And the teachers' unions you see in Chicago and in New York, we've had problems. It's time for Joe Biden to stand up and say, the kids are the most important things, important players here. And the teachers just are going to have to suck it up and stand up and provide an education. Otherwise, these kids have no chance whatsoever, Stephanie. It is a disaster what's happening to them.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. President Biden, hello? Hello? I mean, I know that the unions made you and they put you into office, but can't he see, Mike, that our kids are hurting? And not just, again, in Chicago, but New York and California, you know, all the Democratic-run states and cities. Because your kids are back in school, right, for some type of hybrid learning?
Hybrid, yeah. Our number three son, Pete, is full-time at St. Louis University in-person classes. For the most part. In some cases, not, but in most cases, yes. Daughter number four, she's back in school 2 days a week, but there's many other things going on that brings her in contact with her friends, right. Other students, the musical, sports.
They're doing a musical?
Clubs. Yeah, a socially distanced
right,
version
but you
of
it.
Spamalot, but yeah, it's
something.
It's happening. As our friend Britt Hume would say, about Michael Bloomberg, that's politics talking. A man who's been summarily ignored by Democrats post-Joe Biden.
Right.
A man who...
He dared to take his position away from him.
Well, I think, and I would agree with Britt's how he assesses these things as a commentator and as a journalist. He looks at why would Bloomberg come out against teachers' unions right now? Well, he's had a standard... patter against teachers' union when he was mayor of New York City.
Right.
That was a conflicted relationship. But he's on the outside looking in right now, and to stand out, he takes an unpopular stand that shows up on MSNBC. So that explains some of the reason. The other reason why is perhaps we have to give the man credit, gaining a little bit of a conscience when it comes to looking at, and he has been attuned to the technological divide that has hit urban major public schools for a long time. He's spoken on that for 20 years.
I mean, we lost 44% of black preschoolers did not even sign up for e-learning in Chicago.
I know.
It's We're losing kids to the
horrendous.
Streets.
It's horrendous.
It's child abuse. And here, Lori Lightfoot, you know, yesterday comes out, enough is enough. The runway, the runway, the space on the runway is done. I mean, the metaphor she was trying to use. But we're going to be back here Sunday night in this press conference room, right?
But realistically, there is no school tomorrow anyway. Might we all be back in this spot Sunday night?
There shouldn't. No, I'm not going to be.
Nope.
If you're here, you're by yourself. I'm not going to be. Time's out. Runway done.
312-642-5600. Let's go to Craig, who joins us from Mount Greenwood. Good morning, Craig.
Hey, good morning, Amy. Thanks for taking my call. Listen, this is all a dog and pony show. It's just like what the Democrats and Republicans do when the cameras are on. They're fighting for us like they were fighting about the health care. And then as soon as the cameras are off and behind the scenes, they're together at the bars enjoying. So, oh, we pull the fence around. They're doing exactly what they want. They don't care about these kids. They care about power. It's all, Amy, you see it.
No, I've lived it. We lived this in 2012. We lived this 15 months ago, 2019. And now again, our kids are suffering and nobody cares. And basketball's canceled and nobody cares.
They don't care, but they pretend they do.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Greg, for the phone call. Let's go to Craig in LaGrange. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Fine.
cold. I have to take issue with what Mike Scott said, and I have to take issue somewhat with what you say, Amy. I think I know the sports is terrible because it's part of their social development. But to think that
it builds character, children, too, and it gives them a reason to live. They gave us 14 days. We're on day 329 right now.
Amy, I agree with you. But I think weighted most heavily, and that's weighted very heavily, is the substandard education that these kids are getting. And my nephew is out socializing with his friends, and that's great. I check on him every day because I'm worried that he could be one of these kids that says, this is not worth it, and then just checks it in. And these kids that don't play sports, same thing. But you know what? Eventually, these children are going to have to go out in the world and compete and be educated in some serious subjects. And I can see where they're not being educated as well as they should be. And my fear is that when these children, who may be in honor programs and in honor classes, hit a college, they get hammered. And then who picks up the pieces?
Yep.
What then? This is a complete destruction of a social class of children. And do you honestly, Amy, believe that we're going to be in any other position than the position we are in right now today on Monday morning?
Yeah, we'll be in the same position no matter what she says. Like, no, yeah. I'm not going to be here Sunday night. So if you're here, I'm not here. Thanks, Greg, for the phone call. We got to go. We're up against the clock. But real quickly, is our governor going to help us? JB, where are you, man?
I want it to get resolved as soon as possible. We want parents to be able to send their kids to school. There's no doubt. And we want teachers to be safe at school.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Guess the final score of this Sunday's big game, and you could win $50,000. Enter today at 560theanswer.com/score.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and as expected, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the freshman congresswoman from Georgia, was stripped of her committee post yesterday by the House of Representatives. The issue wasn't whether the Democrats would do it. They have the votes. The issue is whether the Republicans would throw in do the left's bidding for them. And what transpired was 11 Republicans voted with the Democrats to strip MTG. MTG of her committee assignments for the goofy things that she has said on social media and elsewhere in the past. She took to the House floor to defend herself and also to essentially take ownership of the stupid things she said and make apologies. She did it privately first, then she did it publicly.
So I walked away from those things, and I decided I'm going to do what I've done all my life. I'm going to work hard and try to solve the problems that I'm upset about. So I started getting involved in politics. You see, school shootings are absolutely real. And every child that is lost, those families mourn it. I understand how terrible it is because when I was 16 years old in 11th grade, my school was a gun-free school zone, and one of my schoolmates brought guns to school and took our entire school hostage. And that happened right down the hall from my classroom. I know the fear that David Hogg had that day. I know the fear that these kids have. And this is why, and I say this sincerely with all my heart, because I love our kids, every single one of your children, all of our children. I truly believe that children at school should never be left unprotected. I believe they should be just as protected as we were with 30,000 National Guardsmen. Our children are our future, and they're our most precious resource. I also want to tell you 9/11 absolutely happened. I remember that day crying all day long watching it on the news. And it's a tragedy for anyone to say it didn't happen. And so that I definitely want to tell you, I do not believe that it's fake. I also want to tell you that we've got to do better. You see,
So that's a little bit better than Charlie Sheen. She sort of set the record straight. 9/11 happened is wouldn't be something you think would be in controversy, but because of, again, silly conspiracy laden posts that she made on social media, she had to articulate her understanding of these things.
And she also, you know, Newton and Parkland shooting, those school shootings happened because she had, on social media, had said that they were staged.
And so the precedent it sets, though, I mean, remember, we're talking about a body that would be Congress that indulged Robert Byrd for half a century without consequence. You know, a high-ranking member of the Ku Klux Klan and all sorts of goofballs who've said all sorts of stupid things, ignorant things, arguably in some cases have said things that could be fairly taken to be an effort to incite violence against political opponents, Maxine Waters. They have done so without consequence. So you're able to have this position to say what she said and what she posted is idiotic. Also, she should not be stripped of her committee assignments. She's a duly elected member of Congress. We'll see what she does as a member of Congress and respond accordingly. But the key here is what Republicans were going to do. Are they going to make this some sort of litmus test? And McCarthy essentially provided the leadership to avoid that by having Marjorie Taylor Greene provide the mea culpa that she provided privately and publicly. And so what you had is basically the Republicans that are never Trumpers, the Republicans who supported Trump's impeachment, vote along with the Democrats. So you have this small cadre of Republicans that are intent on doing the left's bidding when it comes to standard setting, when it comes to advancing the left's narrative, when it comes to marginalizing the Republican Party. But this is not a civil war within the Republican Party because of the leadership McCarthy provided to stave that off. The combination of Liz Cheney maintaining her post, and by the way, let's have some comparisons. 60 House Republicans voted to strip Liz Cheney of her House Conference Chairmanship, House Republican Conference Chairmanship, versus 11 who voted with the Democrats to strip Green of her committee posts. And so basically, McCarthy, I think, deserves fairly high marks for holding the caucus together and moving this along to be forward looking, not just in opposition to the Biden administration, but in preparation for 2022. 312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline, 64636DA, turnkey.protect.
Well, I know she made, you know, horrific comments. We've got that. We don't have to relitigate that. But the point of contention with the Democrats yesterday was that she regrets her words of the past, but there was no apology. They wanted her to, you know, fall on her knees and apologize. I thought what she said sufficed if I was voting. But you know what? She did make a mistake, but we don't forgive anybody anymore if they make mistakes. Is that the country we're in am I not seeing something?
I think it's clear. I mean, you know, it was widely reported. She apologized and was fairly well received within the Republican caucus when they discussed it. And she had to present her case to her caucus. I don't think she did so publicly, just sort of correcting the record of what all rational people know to be true about these things. But I don't think she did so publicly because I don't think she wants to bend the knee to Nancy Pelosi. And I don't have a big problem with that because, you know, when the presiding officers are illegitimate, you'll excuse me. I may have said and done some dumb things, but come what may, I already know the punishment you have in store for me. The last thing I'm going to do is bend the knee to you, Nancy Pelosi, and extend you legitimacy you don't deserve. So I don't have a huge problem with that. She owes an apology to her caucus. She owes an apology to her constituents. She doesn't owe Nancy Pelosi an apology.
And of course, Nancy Pelosi all up in arms.
You would think that the Republican leadership in the Congress would have some sense of responsibility to this institution. If any of our members threatened the safety of other members, we'd be the first ones to take them off of the committee.
Please.
Because they're claiming that she was threatening violence against other congressional members.
And we've already discussed Maxine Waters, number one. Number two, you know, as soon as you deal with the Chinese Mata Hari's boyfriend there from your state congressional caucus, much less the House Democrat caucus, then I'll be interested in what you have to say. you know, go have a chocolate bar. Lewis on the South Side.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. Miss Green, is this the same lady who was going to, didn't she want to file impeachment charges against Joe Biden?
Yeah.
Right after the,
yeah.
Is that the same lady?
Yes, yeah. It is.
Huh?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So couldn't this be some kind of payback to keep her, you know, to quiet her down?
No. Thanks for the call, Lewis. It's not payback to quiet her down because they are happy to have her talk as much as possible. They're happy to have her in the news so they can continue to try to use her as the defining example of the Republican Party. I mean, filing articles of impeachment or an article of impeachment, any member of Congress can do that. I mean, Democrats were doing it every 5 minutes for 4 years under Trump, and they would get, you know, 10, 50, 70, 90 Democrats to sign on as co-sponsor on the article. It never went anywhere until the Zelensky call that they decided to make their stand. And then, of course, now this, the trial starting next week. So, you know, filing an article that, you know, quickly evaporates into the ether because you don't have the votes to move it. I mean, it really doesn't amount to much. But understand, they're not trying to silence. They may be trying to silence conservatives, generally speaking. But one of the ways they're doing them is by taking extreme examples that are not representative of the viewpoints of Trump voters, of the viewpoints of the Republican Party, of the viewpoints of Republican office holders, and brand the entire universe with that person or that extreme view. That's what they're doing. This is akin to what they're doing with respect to the rioters on January 6th. Those rioters are the violent extremists, are the hate mongers who are representative of all Trump voters, who are representative of all conservatives, who are representative of the Republican Party. That's who we want the American people to understand the Republican Party is. They're gaslighting, they're attempting to gaslight the American electorate with things like Marjorie Taylor Greene's tweets or social media posts, as well as what happened on 1-6. That's what they're actually doing.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy are talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene being stripped of her House committee assignments and what the left's play is here. And I was wedding that to the left's play with respect to the 1-6. Rioting and violence. Randy and Crown Point, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, guys. This has nothing to do with the right Republicans. This has to do with Donald Trump. As long as the political class, right and left, have been opposed to this man from day one. Now, some of the right have supported him, but they only did it on the surface because they knew his popularity. They absolutely loathe anything and anybody that has to do with this man because he broke their system. Their system was politics and politics for life. He was not that guy, and it absolutely demoralized them. People like Mitt Romney, John McCain, they were sort of losers because they couldn't win an election. That how could Donald Trump win this election? That's all this is. It's nothing more, nothing less.
No.
And Green supported him.
Yes. I mean, I agree with the analysis generally, but that's not all that this is because you still have – the Republican Party. And yes, they're happy to have sort of a bipartisan ruling class like Illinois has a bipartisan combine, but only if the Republican side of that ruling class is an insular minority position without power. So yes, it is about Trump, and yes, it is about Trump supporters, and yes, some establishmentarian Republicans are throwing in 10, 11 in the House. A couple in the Senate, few in the Senate, handful. But it's also about branding the Republican Party as the white supremacist party, the party of violent insurrectionists, so that they do not take back the House in 22. They do not take back the Senate in 22. They have no chance at the presidency in 2024. It's a bigger branding exercise than just Trump and Trump supporters, although, of course, it necessarily includes them. And by the way, at the prayer breakfast yesterday, Joe Biden confirmed exactly my point.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560,
The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So we properly understand 2016 and Trump's improbable victory as Trump serving as a vehicle for the revolt against the ruling class. He was the vehicle for that. So we're clear now in the aftermath of everything that transpired in 2020, really from November forward. We're clear now that this isn't, including next week's impeachment trial 2.0, this is not about Trump. It's about you. And it's not even necessarily limited to Trump voters, I would argue. This is anyone who is a common sense nonconformist. You understand? The common sense nonconformist is the product and the target of the big tech Fortune 500 socialist Democrat government consortium. And the hunt is on. It ain't just a movie. Joe Biden at the National Prayer Breakfast yesterday.
We just have to open our eyes. We've just witnessed images that we've never imagined, images that now we'll never forget. A violent assault on the U.S. Capitol, on our assault on our democracy, on our Capitol. A violent attack that threatened lives and took lives. We know now we must confront and defeat political extremism, white supremacy, and domestic terrorism. For so many in our nation, this is a dark, dark time. So where do we turn? Faith. Kierkegaard wrote, "Faith sees best in the dark." I believe that to be true.
White supremacy, violent extremism, domestic terrorism. And by the way, a very appropriate Kierkegaard reference. I don't know if he just ripped that from Neil Kinnock, an old Neil Kinnock speech, or he's got a very good speechwriter. But it's perfect because existential nihilism is the faith. Joe Biden isn't Catholic. He's an existential nihilist, and so is the left. And that informs this hunt that they're on. It informs the branding campaign that they're doing, as we were discussing last hour. The common sense nonconformist is the product and the target. Very important story that Tucker Carlson reported last night about Bank of America. So, socialist Democrat government, you heard from the top of it, the President of the United States. How about Fortune 500 America? You ready to hear about them? Bank of America folding in to aid and abet the hunt.
This show has obtained exclusively evidence that Bank of America, the second largest bank in the country with more than 60 million customers, is actively but secretly engaged in the hunt for extremists in cooperation with the government. Bank of America is, without the knowledge or the consent of its customers, sharing private information with federal law enforcement agencies. Bank of America effectively is acting as an intelligence agency, but they're not telling you about it. In the days after the January 6th riot at the Capitol, Bank of America went through its own customers' financial and transaction records, a lot of them. Now, these were the private records of Americans who had committed no crime. People who, as far as we know, had absolutely nothing to do with what happened at the Capitol on January 6th. But at the request of federal investigators, Bank of America searched its databases looking for people who fit a specific profile.
Bank of America throwing in to potentially, and we'll get to that, illegally spy on their customers.
Well, aren't there ramifications for that? I mean, that's not legal. If they didn't,
customers confirmed as transacting either through bank account, debit card, or credit card purchases in Washington, D.C. between January 5th and January 6th. Number two, purchases made for hotels, Airbnb, RSVPs in Washington, Virginia, or Maryland after January 6th. Number three, any purchase of weapons or at a weapons-related merchant between January 7th and their upcoming suspected stay in the D.C. area around Inauguration Day. And four, airline-related purchases since January 6th.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. You ready to cut up your Bank of America credit card, close that account?
I'd be so PO'd if I found out they did that to me. That is none of their business. They're treating you like a criminal, even though you haven't committed a crime.
What if you found out they did that to you because you got a knock on the door from the FBI asking what you were doing in and around the Capitol on January 5th or January 6th? We noticed you purchased a big gulp from the 7-Eleven inside the Beltway, some 7-Eleven inside the Beltway.
Were you there?
Are you a white supremacist? That's what's going on.
Who do you pray to? Yeah.
Well, the first thing you notice is that it's remarkably broad. Any purchases of anything in the city of Washington, D.C., any overnight stay anywhere in the three-state area that spans hundreds of miles, any purchase, not simply of legal firearms, but instead anything bought from a, quote, weapons-related merchant, T-shirts included, and then any airline-related purchases. Not just flights to Washington, flights to anywhere, to Omaha, to Thailand. That is a very, very wide net, an absurdly wide net.
It's one thing when these big banks say we're going to virtue signal by not doing business with federal firearm license holders, for example. We're not going to do business with gun concerns. It's another thing to make your business their business and serve as a sentinel for the state without any basis to do so, other than, as Tucker Carlson described, you know, the fact that you happen to be in the area of violent activity on a particular day. Well, then are they going to, I mean, they wouldn't do this, but are they going to do that in Chicago every day? You're within a 7-mile radius of shootings.
Shot or carjacked, yeah. But since when is a bank a policing agency? It's so foreign to me.
Bank of America identified a total of 211 customers who met these, quote, thresholds of interest. And it was at that point, the show has learned, Bank of America turned over the results of its internal scan to federal authorities, apparently without notifying the customers who were being spied upon. Federal investigators then interviewed at least one of these unsuspecting people. And that person, we've learned, hadn't done anything wrong, and in the end, was cleared. Imagine if you were that person. The FBI hauls you in for questioning in a terror investigation, not because you've done anything suspicious. You haven't. You bought plane tickets and visited your country's capital. You thought you could do that. You thought it was your country. Hmm. Now they're sweating you because your bank, which you trust with your most private information, information of everything you buy, has ratted you out to the feds without telling you, without your knowledge. Because Bank of America did that, you are being treated like a member of Al-Qaeda. What country is this?
I often ask myself that. What country is this?
Tucker Carlson's show reached out to Bank of America for a comment, and
this is what
they said.
We asked Bank of America about this. They confirmed it actually happened by not denying it. Here's their statement in full, which manages to make the whole thing even creepier, assuming that's possible. Quote, we don't comment on our communications with law enforcement. Well, apparently not. All banks, it continues, have responsibilities under federal law to cooperate with law enforcement inquiries in full compliance with the law, end quote. Now, the last part, from a lawyer's perspective, is the essence. In full compliance with the law. It's the law. We had no choice. But that's not true. Bank of America did have a choice. The bank could have resisted turning over information on its innocent customers to federal investigators, but Bank of America did not do that. Nor is it clear, if we're going to be precise about it, that what Bank of America did is even legal. It turns out it's not simple. It's a gray area.
And before we get to that, because you'll hear some legal opinion on the topic, it's not clear to me from Tucker's report whether we know if Bank of America was approached by federal investigators or they volunteered.
Right.
I mean, don't put it back. Don't put it past these big corporations, these big woke
social justice corporations
to volunteer. I noticed you're hunting for Trump supporters. Can we help? I wouldn't put that past the C-suites at Bank of America or a lot of other corporations. This is a reminder that if the Republican Party wants to begin its branding, enhanced branding campaign for 2022 and beyond, rather than all of sort of the internal strife, focusing on the internal strife, disagreements about Trump and impeachment and so forth, how about a declarative statement shedding corporate America as a particular constituency of interest for the Republican Party? We're not going to target corporate America because we believe in free minds and free markets. Corporate America can do what it wants within the bounds of the law. And maybe, I don't know, there's a list or there's sectors, but we're done serving as the middlemen for rent-seeking corporations who preach capitalism, practice capitalism and preach and participate in Marxism, cultural and otherwise. This is a real opportunity for the Republican Party if it wants to be relevant. Carlson's the legal opinion is Carlson got it, but as to the question of whether or not what Bank of America did potentially runs afoul of the law. Potentially it does.
We spoke to a number of lawyers about this today. Some of them told us that what Bank of America did might in fact not be legal and could in fact be challenged in court. One knowledgeable attorney pointed us to 12 U.S.C. 3403. That's a federal law that allows banks to tip off the feds to any information that, quote, may be relevant to a possible violation of any statute or regulation. Now, the DOJ instructs federal agents to remind banks of that law, and of course they do with maximum aggression. But the question is, legally, what constitutes information that may be relevant to a possible crime? Buying a muffin in Washington, D.C. on January 5th? Does that make you a potential domestic extremist? According to Bank of America, yes. Yes, it does.
I'd like to hear a legal opinion from Biden's selection for Attorney General, Merrick Garland. I'd like to hear a legal opinion from the White House.
Oh, because if we did it to them, they'd be outraged. It'd be on the mainstream media, which you know they're not going to pick up this story.
This is great reporting by Tucker Carlson. He did something important last night. Frank in Franklin Park.
Maybe it's a rhetorical question, but did the federal government and Bank of America do the same thing for the riots in Milwaukee, Minneapolis, Portland? And he's right. If they had done that under Trump's administration, there would be hell to pay in the media.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for the call, Frank. Right. Are they looking at sustained, organized terrorist organizations, domestic terrorist organizations like Antifa?
BLM.
If you were in Portland, if you bought a bookstore, a book at the Women and Women First bookstore in Portland, are you going to get a knock on the door to the FBI? Have to turn off your Indigo Girls tape to answer questions about why you're in Portland and why you bought that Susan Faludi book at the local bookstore.
That'd be
something.
I should laugh. It's sad, but
Why
did you purchase hemp?
Carl in Arlington Heights.
Kierkegaard said a lot of things, one of which was anxiety is a dizziness of freedom. And it appears that those in the media and Democrat establishment are suggesting that the only way to relieve anxiety is to relieve us of freedom.
Yeah. Well said. Thanks, Carl. Leo in Wicker Park.
Yeah, I'm really happy that you and Carlson are touting these things about big tech, because it mimics and mirrors much of the writings of Ted Kaczynski. And maybe you guys should leave Illinois and move to a house in Montana.
You first, Leo. Thanks for the call, you moron. Oh, that really? This is Ted Kaczynski.
No.
I mean, that Leo is an example of what I'm talking about. Tucker Carlson reporting on this, which is of questionable legality, what Bank of America did. It certainly triggers a conversation about privacy rights, about contractual rights, sort of terms of service agreements to be a Bank of America customer. I'm sorry, who is talking about violence here? Not us. Leo in Wicker Park, you dope, you simpleton. You perfect representative of the Jacobin left. You wonderful existential nihilist that has thrown in with Joe Biden to join the hunt and to ignore anything that happens to people that you don't agree with, because it won't ever happen to you, Leo, or somebody that you do care about. Okay. Yeah, that's how these things play out. Mm-hmm. You're real sharp, Leo. Marty in Naperville.
Hey, good morning. A couple things. One, I hope Chase doesn't do this, because I buy so much stuff from My Pillow, I'd be condemned for life because they hate Mike Lindell. And second of all, we should be rest assured to know that this Len Psaki, she's not going to incite an erection. I mean, an insurrection.
Thanks for the call, Marty.
And remember, when you do order from My Pillow, use promo code Amy. Thank you.
Who would have thought we would live in a country where ordering a My Pillow was an act of defiance against your government? Tom in Blue Island.
Dan and Amy, good morning. Dan, last week Scott was filling in for Amy, and you and Scott the Cow Guy had a really good discussion about fighting this with our wallets. And I've been a big Walmart supporter for years. And the whole story is Sam Walton and everything. And now the idea of going in to a Walmart, it's like I think twice about it. And the idea that if banks are following us, then and you know what you'll be called for saying banks are following us? You'll be called a kook. You'll be called a nut.
It's not about following us. It's about weaponizing our information for a law enforcement to target people without any cause, purchasing a product, happening to be in the metro area on January 6th and purchasing a product does not make you a person of interest. I'm sorry. Or if you want that to be the standard, then you want the suspension of the rule of law. Then you're getting into sort of barrier. Show me the man and I'll show you the crime territory. Thanks for the call, Tom.
It's just also, too, who wants their bank to be a policing agency? What are they, like, FBI agents wannabes?
Vince in St. Charles.
That's right. I don't want them to be a policing agency. When I seen that report yesterday, I seen that card up there. I said, well, I had the application. I tore it up. It's one of my major credit cards. I'm a good customer. I was a good customer. I go up, put it in the drawer, take the other work card out. They're done. I don't have much of a fight, but I'll fight back any way I can.
Thanks, Vince. Gene in Barrington.
Hi, it's Bank of America was questioned. Why wasn't Chase? Why wasn't BMO and Fifth Third? Do we all have to ask our bank if they've been giving out our information?
It's a great question. I think the answer is yes. Thanks for the call. I think the answer is, yeah, I think Tucker Carlson got tipped off about what Bank of America did, and so they pursued Bank of America. But yeah, I mean, to the extent, are other banks participating in this, other corporate institutions participating in this? What you downloaded from iTunes on January 5th or January 6th, or what you do generally speaking?
What podcasts you're listening to? I mean, who knows?
Yeah,
how far this goes.
And I'm serious. So think about really trying to zero in. What if you? I think this guy is a crank. You've heard me talking about him before. I think he's a goof. But if you watch or download Alex Jones's podcast, that makes you a person of interest. That makes you a suspected domestic terrorist? No, it doesn't. You do not want that to be the standard. Marianne and Wilmette.
Hi. This whole story just sort of blows my mind. And this whole thing with Bank America, first of all, I'm so glad I canceled my account earlier this year. Secondly, it just reminds me of back that serial killer years ago. Remember when they didn't, Apple wouldn't open up his phone? There was a big deal that they couldn't get in.
Yeah.
They couldn't.
Well,
it, to me, it's very similar. And also, another final question or another final thought. do these people, like Leo, that nut job, do they really believe the nonsense that they spew? And I say that because I have a dear sister who has just become unhinged. She went off on me about that this Trump and all, these people who support Trump, I used to love them and I used to respect them, but now I don't. And I'm thinking, oh my God, she's talking about me. She went completely unhinged. I had to get somebody at my office to get me off the phone to say that there was a call for me so that I could just quietly say, I got to go now, and hung up. Haven't talked to her in a month. It's sickening, but it's some people get unhinged, and it's frightening that they believe, that they believe this nonsense, and I don't even know anymore. So thanks. Have a great day.
Thanks for the call, Marion. I think they do. It's interesting. There's a recent study from a Stanford psychologist about why grandiose narcissists tend to be more successful in attaining organizational leadership posts in politics specifically. And so there's a certain profile that certain characteristics that tend to be more prevalent in certain quarters. And so Leo would be a good example of these grandiose narcissists that believe that if they oppose something more vociferously than other people, like violence or racism, then those who disagree with them on a candidate or a particular policy become their enemy. They're an example of what I'm railing against. So not only am I a good person and a leader for taking a pedestrian stand against things that most people abhor, but now I'm going to marginalize those who disagree with me, those who won't follow my lead, as the embodiment of what I'm standing against, what I'm combating, because I need boogeymen to justify the silliness of my position. That's Leo. And so many of these grandiose narcissists that populate the left.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, the move to recall Gavin Newsom that is afoot in California. Not the only recall effort happening in a blue state. We got one here in Illinois. A group in St. Charles, calling themselves District 303 Move Forward, seeks to recall St. Charles District 303 school board members Nick Mannheim, Carolyn Wabel, Becky McCabe, Jillian Barker, and Ed McNally. And they're circulating a petition to do so. Why, pray tell, would you want to recall members of your local school board? Well, to get an answer to that question, we're pleased to be joined by Michelle Casile, who is part of that District 303 Move Forward group. Michelle, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on the show.
So why are you guys upset with your local school board?
Well, there's a few reasons why. The petition was brought forward by 22 people, members of the D303 Move Forward group. Some of the reasons are the decline in academic performance before the pandemic, no focus on student well-being, no data-driven decisions. They do not always follow policy, lack of transparency, communication, accountability, and some conflicts of interest. So we've asked them to, we are recalling them and asking them to resign from their positions. So I think that those are reasons that are common among many school boards. This pandemic has highlighted the lack of accountability, communication, transparency in many districts. So.
Well, what has been their reaction to your petition that was filed with the King County Recorder's Office?
Yes, it was filed with the King County's Recorder's Office. I think it's been received in the public. There's been some mixed mixed reviews about it, mixed feelings about it. But all in all, we are collecting signatures right now. So a lot of people have been coming forward and talking to us about their experience with the school board, with the district. A lot of them are people who have been in the district for many years, and they've been saying, yeah, we've been seeing this. We've been seeing this. So, they support us. So we have gotten a lot of support. Sometimes that's silent support. I think it's just the times that we live in, but,
this is so interesting because, suburban school districts, particularly in more well-to-do communities like St. Charles, often get a pass because of their reputation. This is a well-heeled community. This is a highly educated community. We're very proud of our school district. They're very possessive of the school district too. Nobody criticized the school district. This is our school. This is where my kids go to school. This is you're going to negatively impact my home value if you criticize anybody here. You can't do that. And so to actually look at what the school is producing is an act of revolution in this state. It's remarkable. So what is St. Charles producing? What has happened to St. Charles specifically? Because I whatever's happened to St. Charles, and I don't know it as well, I can tell you it's happened in terms of declining work product, declining student performance, declining student preparedness. It's happening in Naperville and Wheaton and Barrington and New Trier as well. It's just some of these other communities, Hinsdale, some of these other communities don't want to admit it.
Yes, and I could cite two examples of the top reasons why, and it's academic performance. Before the pandemic, we were in decline, and another group that I manage, that I administer, is Citizens for D3RTHIA Accountability, and we talk a lot about academic performance. One example is for the last 3 years before COVID, D3RTHIA high school composite SAT scores were below 1,100. D3RTHIA ranked sixth among eight comparables. And Dan, you just mentioned the comparables. Those are our comparables outside of New Trier. Those other ones, Naperville, Indian Prairie, Barrington, those are our comparables. About 5 out of 10 elementary schools fell below district average academic performance at the fifth grade exit year level before the pandemic. So we need board members who will address the academic decline. And
I got a solution. I got a solution for you. You don't need to recall school board members. Stop testing. Stop measuring. That's the new protocol. Just ignore any efforts to measure, and then you don't have a problem.
I can tell you that every time we post on Citizens for D3RTHIA Accountability, every time we post academic results, they're like, "Oh, well, these are state tests, and just stop. We're testing too much."
All right.
I'm not sure if that's the solution, because we just got our DF report yesterday, finally, because they did not want to give it to us, it was not good. So, we're not doing as well as we could be. And Dan, you made a great point. We're known as a premier school district. That's what we are known as. And people move here for our school districts. But I've been here for about 11 years. In the last like five, it's been a sharp decline. And I think that's leadership. That's more has to do with leadership and the decisions that they make.
All right, Michelle, but then how has the pandemic made it worse, and how have they handled the pandemic? Are they looking at the science and the data?
No, they're not looking at the science and the data. I mean, we're like every other district. I mean, we're not completely remote, but we are hybrid, and we only have 2.5 days. Our high schoolers can't eat lunch. Our high schools can't eat lunch in school, and our middle school goes every other day. And that day that they're home is synchronous. So our instruction time is cut. It's cut drastically this year. So they're hoping to cover 75% of the curriculum. So we lost curriculum last year and instruction time last year, and now we're just going to meet 75%. It's not good enough. So we're not unique in that, but it doesn't help when pre-COVID
you're in decline. So
please tell me, though, that the 25% of the curriculum that won't be covered is not Black Lives Matter Week curriculum. But please tell me that was salvaged. Has that been salvaged?
I'm sure it has. I'm sure it has. Yes, we've gotten a lot of screenshots of some interesting curriculum. So
I mean that's actually a serious point too. So rather than preparedness in the traditional disciplines, reading, writing, arithmetic, so to speak, St. Charles, these again well-to-do communities run by with schools run by Champagne Socialists, they're buying in. Hook, line, and sinker to critical race theory and all of this agitprop disguised as instruction.
Yes, they are. There is an upcoming vote on deep equity. Corwin, who it's a deep equity program. Equity Corwin.
Didn't Ed Harris star in Deep Equity?
Yeah. The sequel, yeah. Equity.
I'm
yeah.
sorry, go ahead. Deep Equity program. That doesn't sound too Orwellian, right?
It's Gary Howard's program. They want to, this is the first pass, which is a training program for teachers and with a program director. And we have an upcoming vote. But here's the funny part about this is that there's a whole other group that is working on educating the public, our community, our D303 community, just on deep equity. So we have a lot of issues happening at the same time. And the D303 Move Forward is an extension of our Reopen group. It kind of came out of the Reopen Schools group. That is another big issue, another big vote, and it makes it very difficult when parents cannot go, are limited to go in and speak and interact with our administrators, interact with our board members.
I'll tell you what, on that score, there's actually a model from Nutrier to follow. It's not the school districts. It's this Nutrier Neighbors group that was started up there, sort of like your Move Forward mm-hmm. group in 303. And when they wanted to do I Hate White People Instruction Day at Nutrier High School, they said, that's fine. You can bring in the people who want to call every person who's white an oppressor just because they're white and every person who's a minority a victim just because they're a minority. You can do that if you want. But you have to expand the presenters to include respected civil rights leaders and Black academics who don't hold that position, the Bob Woodsons and the Walter Williamses, God rest his soul, and the Thomas Sowells of the world, Jason Riley, John McWhorter. I could go on and on because we've had them all on this program. And now we've got another one, Mark Robinson, who's the newly elected lieutenant governor in North Carolina, first Black lieutenant governor of North Carolina. He is railing against the critical race theory instruction in North Carolina schools. Talking about how that all this critical race theory that's being taught at the second grade level there. There's no reason why we should be trying to teach second graders about the complex issues of race. Those children have enough on their plate learning how to read, write, and do mathematics. So maybe you can bring Mark Robinson in. But my point is to say, you know, rather than trying to play their game of saying, I'm against the Black Lives Matter week, and so like let's fight whether or not we should have that. No, you have yours, and you present your ideas, and then let us present people that are equally credentialed and have just as much, if not more, standing to talk about race issues to present their ideas, and let's have the students hear both sides, and let's see how that works out for the critical race theorists.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think what they're missing here is that the diversity, especially for our school board, we need more diverse backgrounds on the D303 board. We need more people who have professional experience with making data-driven decisions and accountability mechanisms like strategic plans to even come to the table, have a different perspective or a more wide-range perspective coming to the table, because right now we have some board members with an educational background, board members who have not been in the professional world practicing, you know, for years. We only have one professional on the board, and she is not being recalled. because she's demonstrated at the board table that she wants to hold the superintendent accountable. She wants to address academic decline and focus on student well-being. So we need more board members like that. And I think before you start, I think you make a great point, Dan, before you start bringing in all these programs and changing curriculum, bring the diverse perspectives at the board table and, you know, let them talk about it. Let them talk to their constituents about it, to parents and the public, and really see what kind of a student body you have as well. I mean, we, like every other school, we have bullying issues, we have vaping issues, we have all those issues. But I haven't seen, you know, I'm sure that we do have race issues, racial tension or racial issues that happen, but are they rampant? Are they, do they require programs like this? I'm not quite sure. And I don't think the board, and here's my point, I don't think the board has even asked that question of the public.
Of course not. Yeah, of course not. They're too afraid to ask that question. Yeah. And so the recall effort, you know, for other people listening, like we had a couple guys running for school board in 214 in the Northwest Burbs on the other day, and they're providing an example. You're providing an example. Your group is. So people hearing this and saying, well, I don't want to run for school board, but I'd be happy to take out some people who are on the school board through the legal process. And so the recall effort, what does it entail? What are you guys doing?
So basically, we're gonna ask them to resign. We're collecting, so we're following the governor's process basically, which is collecting 5% of the last signatures from the last election, and we're gonna ask them to resign formally. But really, this is an education process. This is educating our community on what the issues are and how we need to, why we need change. And then we're going to go to the city and villages and ask them to adopt an ordinance like Buffalo Grove. Buffalo Grove currently has a recall ordinance, and they're probably the only one that I know of in the state of Illinois. And then it remains to be seen if this will go to a special election. I mean, if they, that is up to the election board.
Buffalo Grove, there was a trustee recalled in Buffalo Grove.
Oh, yeah.
It can happen.
Yeah. It's possible.
Yeah, it can happen. So really we're using this as a process to educate, because that's really my background has been, my history in this district has been to educate people on the D303 facts and let them make their decision. So educate and then take this to our city and villages and say, hey, there's really a need for a recall process. I mean, you know, I just want to say this. School board members are elected officials who take an oath of office. This is not a volunteer position, which is what our school board members have been calling it. They've been calling it a volunteer position. You know, we're a large school, $200 million budget at D303 and almost 12,000 students. So about 84% of our budget is funded by taxpayers. That does not seem like a volunteer position.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, I mean, the point is, right, that you volunteer to run for office, you volunteer to serve, but there are fiduciary and other responsibilities attendant to the choice you made to volunteer. I mean, this like, I don't need this. I'm a volunteer. Good. Well, then stop volunteering if you don't need it. No problem. We'll find somebody else. I'm
correct.
It's just like politicians at other levels to say that, oh, I don't need this. I'm selfless. I'm sacrificing. Hey, you know what? Stop sacrificing for me. Hey, don't stop doing me favors. Okay. If it's too much trouble, no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm glad you pointed that out. All right. I'm sorry. But more information, if people want more information out your way or just in general to maybe replicate what you and you guys in St. Charles are doing.
Yeah, we actually, Plainfield D202 is doing the same thing as we are, and that's where we got a lot of advice from. We're on Facebook at D303 Move Forward. It's an action page, so anyone can view it. You know, they can come, they can ask us questions, they can reach out to us if they have any questions and they want to replicate a recall of their school board as well. And we'll be happy to help them and answer any questions.
Michelle Casile, St. Charles, District 303 Move Forward Group. Michelle, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck out there.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show today.
Yeah. Thank you for all that you do. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560 The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I love it when people show you who they are, tell you straight away. It's so clarifying. Eliminates unnecessary back and forth. So, for example, Brian Proffitt, he's the head of the North Carolina Association of Educators. That's a 43,000-member teachers union there. And he is a revolutionary socialist. Yeah. We are revolutionary. So this is a statement for Proffitt's Liberation Road. We are revolutionary socialists in the U.S. dedicated to fighting for a social system where social wealth is not in the hands of a few billionaires, but is controlled by the people. Liberation Road also goes on to say, using the framework of the United Front, we identify the new Confederacy composed of mostly of the most reactionary faction of capital and middle strata, right-wing racists united in the Republican Party as the main enemy. We use this term to emphasize the fact that the right in this country is rooted in a racist program and strategy. And he goes on to talk about how he really enjoys the teachings of Mao and so on and so forth. Representing 43,000 teachers educating kids in North Carolina. But tell me again how this cultural Marxists aren't in charge of K-12 education, generally speaking, in this country, and why you're confused as to what that has wrought. Oh, and by the way, since we're at the end of Black Lives Matter in the classroom week, for those of you who have kids actually in the classroom this week, just thought I'd tell you just exactly how far their critical race theory, which is just a front for cultural Marxism, is going. The Lives and Deaths of Shelter Animals, a new book by a CRTist named Katja Gunther, claims that dogs are being killed in shelters because of, quote, capitalism, anthroparchy, white supremacy, and patriarchy. She argues that allowing dogs to sleep inside is a privilege reserved for the white and the wealthy, and that policies against keeping dogs chained up in backyards are intended to oppress people of color by imposing, quote, middle-class norms of animal keeping in which companion animals are considered family and treated accordingly. And that is not only racist, it ignores the fact that people of color are, quote, themselves trapped in poverty, may have few options for legitimate income generation, and possibly rely on dogs for status. Seriously.
Okay. Bit of a stretch.
That's where critical race theory goes. For all those people running around thinking they're serious and have you read Robin DiAngelo? Have you heard of Ibram Kendi? Ta-Nehisi Coates, what a brilliant mind he is. Let's bring him to our school district to address an assembly we'll cobble together, say the rich, guilty, vacuous, white leftists in suburban America. Well, these are the same people. Keeping a dog in your home is the indicia of privilege. It's racist because many people of color can't. It also, of course, is a cartoonish caricature of people of color in this country, which is what the left is really doing. And that seems to never get properly called, as if there are no people of color in this country who are wildly wealthy, much less middle-income families. It's actually where the bulk of, for example, African-American families find themselves in the middle income quintiles. But anyway, just so you know, we're not making it up. We're just repeating their words to our audience. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Sam Sorbo. She is a filmmaker, radio host, actress, international activist, and author. She hosts a weekly nationally syndicated radio program and podcast, The Sam Sorbo Show, and she's the author of They're Your Kids, Teach From Love and True Faith, which she co-authored with her husband, also an actor, of course, Kevin Sorbo. She's got a new book Words for Warriors, Fight Back Against Crazy Socialists and the Toxic Liberal Left, which is perfect.
Yeah, that's a handbook here in Chicago, right?
Well, also, yeah, I don't know. Maybe she'll have time to do a second volume if she didn't tackle the critical race theory for dogs, if she didn't get it to that in this book. Sam Sorbo, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. You guys are a hoot. This is just, it's just amazing. And you heard PETA came out and said, don't call people chicken.
Yeah.
That's speciesist.
Speciesist.
I can't even say it, right?
That's right.
And you need to call them cowards. And I said, well, what about the cows?
Right. Yes. No, you can't. Right. You can't be using animal designations to impugn human beings. That's exactly right.
Like
right.
Snake, you know what? Cow.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
This would be so laughable if they weren't so deadly serious. And I mean deadly because they are deadly and they're serious. And this is what we call liberal fascism. It's basically, so political correctness is fascism of language. It is dictating to you what you may and may not say. So we have lost our freedom of speech because you and I both know there are certain things that you cannot say. And I'm not saying, you know, you can't say swear words on the air because that's just an FCC thing or whatever. There are words that we are not allowed to utter because of political correctness, which is fascism of language. So, you know, my book, Words for Warriors, it pokes fun at that, but it also has a serious bent, and it talks about this. And, for instance, fascism, the word itself, this is something that I really am trying to get across to people. There is nothing about fascism that is in any way, shape, or form right-wing, okay? Fascists are left-wing. Antifa, which is funny because it's supposed to stand for anti-fascist, they are the worst fascists of all. And so we really need to take our language back and stop allowing the left to basically hijack our words and then turn them against us somehow. We have to stop allowing that to happen.
Right. Like, remember the term Karen? That used to be describing a liberal. Yes. Now it's just to describe a right-wing crazy lady.
Yes. And you know who did a phenomenal job at combating this was Donald Trump. So fake news was actually a left-wing propaganda tactic. And he picked it up and he turned it against them. He isolated, which is part of the Saul Alinsky eight tactics for Rules for Radicals, which, by the way, my book is sort of named in concordance with that. So instead of Rules for Radicals, we have Words for Warriors. But Trump turned fake news against them. He isolated CNN and they became the fake news network. And so we have a great example for how to combat these things, but we have to start now. So from now on, I empower you to use the term liberal fascist, because that's what they all are. When you're speaking to a liberal who is fully indoctrinated and fully dedicated to, quote unquote, the cause, the Marxist cause, they're a liberal fascist. Okay.
Got it. Yeah, I mean, I mean, liberal. I think that's too generous. Leftist, you know, liberal is calls to mind classical liberals. Liberal, you know, being liberal was a synonym for being pluralist
right.
Once upon
but
a time.
Notice you have to add classical liberal because liberal no longer means liberal.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
It's
correct.
Liberal fascist. So let's just call them liberal fascist. They've got white privilege, white supremacist, which basically don't exist. They're made-up terms. Liberal fascist is actually a real term. It applies. So let's use it.
You know, it's interesting, this pronouncement that came out of Canada that could easily be applied to the United States, but that I think would be embraced by so many cores of the United States, which is frightening, and it's this. The Canadian Olympic Committee said its athletes should avoid publicly criticizing China ahead of the 2022 Winter Games in Beijing due to concern that critics could be prosecuted under the Communist Party's national security laws. So this is sort of taking the NBA free speech protocol and making it your national policy.
Yep, that's what that is. And so we have to look. You cannot serve two masters. We have to basically you need to define your loyalty and then stick to it. And they are currently changing fealty from the United States of America, which they deem to be racist and bigoted and all kinds of evil. They are changing their fealty to China. And we ought to be aware that we are at war with China.
A good piece by Pedro Gonzalez over at Chronicle Magazine, where he talks about American capitalism is their enemy and how big corporations, you know, basically buy off these leftists. He writes, if so many leftists did not hate everyday Americans more than they hated the system, corporate system, they would not be so often and easily appeased. Black Lives Matter ultimately strengthened the hand of the system tenfold, allowing corporate America to rehabilitate its image while increasing its power and reach. But the point he makes, which I think is an insightful one, is even as corporate America is aggrandizing its power and reach and just buying off these Marxist extortionists, they're bought off because they hate everyday Americans more than they hate this system where power is concentrated.
Yeah. They're all tremendous hypocrites. You know, even Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's an avowed Marxist, basically is making a huge, you know, she's selling sweatshirts with a 400% markup, something like that. You know, she believes in capitalism. The problem that we have is that we have to understand that leftists lie. They lie all the time about everything. I can't even think of a single like public statement from a leftist that's actually been the truth for so long. And we have to understand that they lie with their words. So they scream for tolerance. They need tolerance because the most intolerant thing that we have is the truth. And of course they're lying, so they have to scream that we must tolerate the lie because the truth won't tolerate the lie. And we just have to understand this is a battle. It's the age old battle. It's good versus evil. The problem is that they are now in and among us, right? It used to be that our battles were with foreign adversaries, but the foreign adversaries are now Americanized. They're Americans. We have socialists and Marxists and communists in our government, and the communism and capitalism are completely incompatible. The problem that they have is capitalism works, and capitalism has created the greatest leap in prosperity that has been known to humankind in history, okay? And the evidence is right there. Even the communists have moved towards capitalism. So we have to decide, are we going to allow the oligarchy to take power? And right now there's a tremendous power shift that's happening with COVID, frankly.
Yeah. And if we don't agree with them, they silence us. But I wanted to ask you about COVID, and I know you're the mother of three children, and how are you handling all of this and the pandemic? And how are your kids doing?
In case you didn't know, I'm a homeschool advocate. So I've been homeschooling for over a decade. The COVID epidemic actually helped my family grow closer. We took advantage of the isolation to become closer as a family. And despite all the hardships that it presented, and it did, you know, and we all suffered under what's been happening in the culture and in our community. I'm not really sure what else I can tell you. I would refer people to samsorba.com if they're at all interested in looking at homeschooling. I highly recommend it. It is easier than you think, and it is more rewarding than you could ever possibly dream. And what they are doing to our children in our schools is nothing short of child abuse. So I would highly recommend that parents not even consider sending their children to public school. I think that if you don't school them, they might actually do better than if you would send them to public schools. So the bar is very low for what a parent has to accomplish when they attempt to homeschool, because if their comparison is public school, they can't help but do better than what's happening in our public schools. And I want to say, I don't go after teachers. I think teachers, by and large, are wonderful people who are trying to work in a perverted and corrupted system. But our public schools have been fully corrupted. The things that they're teaching our children are detrimental, very damaging. And even the system itself is damaging. So, you know, we're talking about COVID. And have you noticed that nobody's asking any questions? The reason that nobody's asking any questions, that Fauci was allowed to just stand on the stage and make pronouncements with absolutely no economic background whatsoever. He determined what our economy was going to do in response, which is an abysmal betrayal. And nobody asked any questions, least of all the media. which is so shocking because that is in essentially their job is to ask questions. But for instance, we started with 2 weeks to flatten the curve. That made sense to everybody because the curve was supposedly going to spike. At the time, we thought 2.2 million deaths. You know, we had outlandish figures that then proved not to be true. And then it morphed into slow the spread, okay? Not even stop the spread, but slow the spread. And nobody raised their hand to ask, why are we slowing the spread? Maybe speeding the spread is better. I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying I have the answer. I'm saying nobody asked the question. Why did nobody ask the question? Because we have all been trained that you are not allowed to ask a question unless you can raise your hand first. And by the way, that's discriminatory because what about people who can't raise their hands?
Right.
Right. So we've all been trained to behave. We've all been trained to follow the directions, and only move at the sound of a bell. We are all programmed. Okay. That's why we all just think, well, we'll send our kids to public school. I did it. I know so many people who do it. They get their kids, they have their kids and they go, yes, he's going to public school. Or, you know, then they try to make other plans. My point is, let's break that paradigm. Let's look at our language. That's why I wrote the book Words for Warriors, because I want people to really consider the paradigm that we're living in right now. They are destroying our language. And by the way, language, argumentation, debate, discussion, conversation is the last ditch resort before what? Before violence. If the left succeeds in silencing us, violence is the next step. They love violence. That's a win for them. Let's not let them win.
You and Kevin must be a real hit on the Hollywood cocktail circuit. Sam Sorbo, filmmaker, radio host, actress, international activist, and author. She hosts the weekday nationally syndicated radio program and podcast, The Sam Sorbo Show. She's also the author of They're Your Kids, Teach from Love, and True Faith, which she co-authored with her husband, Kevin. The new book, as she mentioned, Words for Warriors, Fight Back Against Crazy Socialists and the Toxic Liberal Left. Sam, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck with the book.
Hey, thank you so much. And people can go to Sorbo Family Film Studios to find out more about our movies and our work in Hollywood.
Okay, great. Sorbo, S-O-R-B-O, Sorbo Family Film Studios. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good day. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
That's that time, Open Mic Friday, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, taking your calls with comments, concerns, critical, constructive criticism, conspiracy theories, general crackpottery, whatever it is you'd like to offer.
Super Bowl parties. Are you going to one, Dan?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Good talk. Is something you wanted to start with?
Yeah. I'm upset. Mayor Lifer yesterday, enough is enough. Today it ends. It ends today. Today.
Is we need to get a deal done today.
Today.
I'm not going to speculate. We need to get it done today. There's no reason why we shouldn't have gotten it done yesterday or Tuesday or Monday. But
you know what, though? We didn't get a deal done because you didn't put your foot down and you didn't lock them out of e-learning. And who does she think she's dealing with? These are extortionists.
But realistically, there is no school tomorrow anyway. Might we all be back in this spot Sunday night?
There shouldn't. No, I'm not going to be. If you're here, you're by yourself.
No,
I'm not going to be. Time's out. Runway done.
Yeah, we've reached the end of the runway. Dan.
Back in July 8th, back on July 8th of last year, that same Mayor Triple Threat who says Trump's the reason there is an impasse.
Mm-hmm.
About opening schools, she said, quote, "This really has to be a localized decision. Candidly, I don't put much weight into what President Trump says, particularly given his lack of leadership over the course of this pandemic. But making those kinds of decisions has to lie with the local school district because we and they are the ones that know what's actually happening in local circumstances. So if you don't put any stock in what he said and did, and you know that the decisions lie with the locals, then how could you be blaming him for the impasse at present? Huh, that'd be an interesting question to ask. Repeating her quote to her. Rich in Indian Head Park.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. I got a few things. The first thing is I'd like to tell Amy that she said that Ocasio-Cortez was attractive. Well, to me, I think, Amy, you're attractive.
Oh, well. Yes, that's so nice.
Cortez, not so much. To me, she sounds like a squeaky toy, and every time she talks, she squeaks a little more. But the second thing is in the first time in 55 years, I won't be watching the Super Bowl, except for the national anthem to see if any morons are going to still take a knee. So I was question for you guys are you going to watch the Super Bowl? I know earlier in the year, Dan, we talked about watching the regular season, and you said you weren't going to watch it based on players taking a knee. So I'm just wondering, are you guys going to watch the Super Bowl this year?
I'm watching it for sure. I'm a Bucks fan because of my son, and I'm watching it.
I don't know. I may catch some of it. I don't. You know, I dumped all my tickets to all of the Chicago sports teams, and I mean, I caught a little bit of a Bears game here and there. I really didn't watch much. I really haven't paid attention to sports generally, even the White Sox, who I love. I don't know. They've beaten the interest out of me.
These
professional sports leagues.
Yeah, they've infiltrated the sports with social justice messages. And, you know, you want to go watch sports to escape, not to be reminded of things and to hear, you know, what their opinion is. Just play the game, guys.
Author, Mike in Kakuna, Wisconsin.
That's Kaukauna.
Yeah, same difference.
Like the cheese.
I don't recognize Wisconsin pronunciations.
They've beaten the interest out of me, Dan.
Yeah.
Amen. What a line that is. So anyway, thanks for having me on your show.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps you remember the 1980s self-help, self-awareness book called Who Moved My Cheese?
Yeah.
I think it was written by a doctor. But anyway, last year, 2020, perhaps you remember that as well. That's when the whole COVID scam came about.
Yeah.
I wrote a follow-up to that book called Who Moved My Bourbon? And now, as we give witness to what is arguably the greatest assault on reason that the universe has ever seen, I'm writing another follow-up to that, and it's called Who Moved My Fentanyl?
Who Moved My Fentanyl? Oh, okay, Mike. Thanks for the call. That's a little aggressive, I think.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah. That was also sort of a long walk.
To get there, yes, yeah. I agree.
Kevin in Austin, Texas.
Hey, Kevin.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Sorry about that.
Hello.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in Illinois in exile.
Yeah.
But the reason I'm calling is I would love it if you guys define the problem fantastically. It's awesome. But I'd love it if you guys had some young Republicans, I don't know, young Chicago Republicans, whatever, give them a platform as far as what they're trying to do, party building, things like that. Let's bring the fight into Chicago, you know, and try to see what they have to say.
Okay, well, sure. I'm open-minded on the topic. Thanks for the call, Kevin. I mean, I'm open-minded on anybody who's building a mousetrap that's interesting. And so this is why we had young woman on today who's leading a recall effort in St. Charles for school board members. We had a couple of school board candidates from the Northwest suburbs on the other day earlier this week. But you have to do something. You can't just say something, particularly if you're just some sort of, like, you know, half-assed Republican functionary who's been part of the problem. I'm not just going to let people come on the show and say we need to lower taxes, shrink government, and advance personal responsibility, blah, blah, blah. We need to keep hope alive. We need to put in the fight. We need to string as many bromides together as we can in 5 minutes so that we can pat ourselves on the back and pretend like we're really in this fight. That's what I won't indulge. So, and I'm not saying you're suggesting that, Kevin from Austin and Chicago and in exile, but I mean, you got to produce something, or you got to be providing a real leadership example that can be replicated and perhaps scaled. Those are the people I'm interested in. Julie and Juliet.
Hi, this is my first time I've ever called a radio station, but I've listened to you guys every morning. I voted for you, Dan, so did my husband.
This is
for Mike Lindell, okay? An idea for him and for our leftist friends that are so concerned about masks. Mm-hmm. We should make a MyPillow mask for them with sayings on the outside if you want, Black Lives Matter, et cetera. And, you know, it would be a nice thick pillow for their nose and mouth.
Oh, I like that. Since we have you, and since you're the creative type, clearly, David Hogg is partnering, he says, with this entrepreneur, William Leggett, to start a competitor company to MyPillow. The key parts of their company, David Hogg's tweet, union made in America to create good jobs that support American families, of course. Have an emphasis on supporting progressive causes, not an attempt a white supremacist overthrow of the United States government. There you go. So what about perhaps a name for David Hogg's pillow company?
I'll have to think about that. My husband says I have what is it?
Hog tired.
I think they definitely need pillows over their mouths and noses.
Smothered.
Okay. Love you guys.
Thanks, Julie.
Love you too. Have a good weekend.
Thanks for calling in. Yeah. Always fun to get a first-time caller. I guess we should throw that out too. You know, if you've got an idea, we'll pass it along to David Hogg for the name of his pillow company.
Smothered.
Terry in Rogers Park.
Probably no one cares about this but me, but I'd like to know if President Trump's portrait is going to be displayed on the White House walls along with all the other past presidents. I wouldn't be surprised if it isn't.
Good question, Terry. Thanks for the call.
It's got to be.
Know the answer.
I can't deny that he was president. Also, I guess they can do anything they want to do.
Is Trump going to have a presidential library?
Yeah, because Obamas are going to be breaking ground soon.
Obamaland, yeah. Still waiting for that. By the way, a small city in Florida declared this week, this is a frostproof Florida, which is such a perfect name for a Florida town. Frostproof. A town of about 3,000 people declared this week Donald J. Trump week.
Good.
I wonder what the festivities included. George in Barrington.
Good morning, Amy and Dan.
Morning.
I learned something Sunday that I want to tell you about. I had dinner with one of the young guys in my office, and he said, let me have your phone, and what's your PIN? And he punched into something called Google Timeline. He said, oh, you got gas at the mobile station. Here, he gave me the time. Then you went to church, and he gave me the address and the name of the church, mm-hmm. when I got there, when I left, when I got home. And then what time I got to the restaurant. He had my whole itinerary. And the beauty part of this is it's all in there from the time you bought the phone. So every place I've been since I got this phone is recorded. Google has that information. And my first thought was, man, if a guy is telling his wife, you know, I was working late, but then she can find out that he was at the Dew Drop Inn, you know.
Sure. It's a popular spot. You know? Yeah, right. Interesting. Yeah, no, I know. That's why I only use burner phones, George, and I recommend that people only use burner
there
phones.
There you go. That'll fix it.
Thanks, George. Appreciate the call.
Got a text message. Hog pillow, my fluffer.
My fluffer. Not bad.
Friend Paul. Thanks, Paul.
Mike in Plano.
Hey, guys. I saw a headline from Ken Strassel this morning, or maybe yesterday. But and I liked her, but she's starting to get a little soft on me lately. But she said that the House vote to retain Liz Cheney proves that it's a big tent party. And I was like, big tent party for who? Who's Liz Cheney's constituency? Her approval rating in her home state's in the teens. So if you're looking for a Big Ten party, you got to go to the deplorables. They're your Big Ten, and they feel alienated right now, especially by Republican leadership, especially McConnell and McCarthy and all these people that are confident that Republicans are going to win Congress in 2022. I'm not so sure, because they just don't speak well for the Trump wing of the party. Kevin McCarthy came out a few months ago and said that we finally found the Trump voter that's not loyal to the Republican Party. Well, why did it take you 4 years? I could have told you those people were 4 years ago. So these people are just out of step, and if they continue this sort of quasi-never Trump stuff, they're probably going to lose.
Thanks for the call, Mike. You're right about Liz Cheney, and we'll find out what kind of constituency she still retains in Wyoming. Poll out this week had her down 30 points to the state legislator that's announced he's going to primary her. We'll see if that sticks. But I actually think Kevin McCarthy's done a pretty good job of navigating these waters this week between Liz Cheney and Marjorie Taylor Greene, and trying to get on to the business of understanding exactly what the left is trying to do with impeachment 2.0 and this gaslighting of America they're doing, and responding on point to that, as well as focusing people's attention on some of what is happening at the hands of the Biden administration. So, Kevin McCarthy's in a difficult spot. I think he navigated this week pretty good. Perry and Niles.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit imshallow.com.
I'm shallow. Thanks, Perry.
Nice.
I'm shallow pillow company, David Hogg. That's pretty good. It works.
Good.
Yeah, the jingle works.
Yeah, fit in beautifully.
David and Lansing.
Good morning. We have heard the lying Marxist actor AOC, who should be nominated for an Oscar for her snowflake performance in the fake attack on her in the Capitol. But I have this solution to this. The solution is to find one of the many innocent citizens attacked by the real insurgents, domestic terrorists, mercenaries, that is, they're paid to do this, Black Lives Matter, or the domestic terrorist mercenaries, Antifa, and give them security and an open forum and a press conference, and let them tell the real story of the insurgents of the U.S. and how that affected them negatively and all their feelings around it. And we should give these people security for like a year so they can put the real story out there of the real domestic terrorists.
Well, thanks for the call, David. You know, there are people doing that, like Andy Ngo, who's written a book about Antifa that people should check out and make their friends and colleagues and family members aware of. But, you definitely want to amplify people who have a story to tell that provides the complete picture, let's say. Mo in Lyons. Hey, Mo.
Oh.
Yeah. They keep throwing out this term white supremacist for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Antifa, BLM, aren't they black supremacists? I never hear that.
Well,
I'm not a white supremacist.
Yeah. Nobody said you were. Thanks for the call, Mo. I mean, and of course, Antifa is mostly, spoiled white kids, but yeah. Kevin in Libertyville.
Hey, good morning, guys. Two quick points. Amy, I know when you're at the press conferences for the fat man, I would imagine that you probably feel fairly lonely in your beliefs and your ideas, and you may even feel uncomfortable with your questions. I just want to give you a little bit of word of encouragement. There are millions of people who are standing behind you, far more than would ever stand behind the nonsense that's sitting behind the podium. It's just a matter of kind of the election fraud, but really stand tall, ask your question, and demand realistic answers and a follow-up. And speaking along the line, Dan, all politics are local. Is there any sort of, I don't want to say national, but I think the way that Republicans or conservatives get back control has to be through the local level, and it has to start that way.
Great.
But is there a place where an individual could go and say, "Hey, listen, I want to get involved. I don't know where to start. Is there, you know, are there elections in my area that I can run for?
Yeah.
Are there resources available?
Yeah, you're in Libertyville. I'd say the Kenosha, Wisconsin Republican Party organization is a good place to start, Kevin.
The other thing is, I mean, I wish there was a national, local. It sounds goofy, but target in a national perspective, target local areas that we know need stronger representation, and stronger representation is available. Last thing, hog thing, hog's breath works for me.
Hog's breath.
Oh,
thanks for the call, Kevin. Although, wait, hog's breath isn't that the name of Clint Eastwood's joint in
California,
in Carmel, yeah. Carmel. It's Carmel, right?
Yeah, it's Carmel.
No, isn't that hog's breath? I think it is. So, no, we can't do that to
How do you remember
Clint.
That? Hog's breath, Carmel.
Jim in Naperville.
Hey, Dan, we finally identified the other person that voted for you with Julie and Juliet.
Yeah, that was my one vote, or two votes from Juliet, I guess. I doubled my normal total, yeah.
Exactly, but I thought you'd be celebrating. But hey, this is my conspiracy theory. I think that Chief Justice Roberts has been compromised from the get-go because he was vetted by none other than Christopher Wray under the direction of Mueller. And I think they pocketed a little factor too that they could use in a later date to leverage him at whatever time they needed.
Thanks for the call, Jim. I did say we'll take conspiracy theory, so
you
that
did.
That
That's
is one.
So the onus lies on you.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to subscribe to it, though. Text from a friend of mine, a suggestion for David Hogg's pillow company, what? My Tampon.
Oh, okay. Gross.
That's oriented to the female customer.
I'm going to pass. Oh, geez, excuse me.
Vic on the north side.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the public school unions. You know, I went to public school in my early years in Chicago, and the two grade schools and high school.
Mm-hmm.
It was a smooth transition. There were no union. Teachers it flowed, you know, like a fine running watch. Now with this union we got now, it's like putting peanut butter on this thing, you know. And I don't know why. I'm a public service recipient. I was a retired policeman. And it was written into our contract, no strike. And I think legislatively, can't they put that in the contract with the teachers union?
Well, they could. Thanks for the call, Vic. There's only 12 states that allow teachers to strike, and Illinois is one of them.
Of course.
So we could change it. So, you know, the majority of states don't have this, and so they don't have this problem. By the way, I got, you know, Sean from Elmwood Park is bothering me. He is doing Steve Cortez. He's filling in for Steve Cortez tonight. So listen to Sean from Elmwood Park filling for Steve Cortez
tonight.
Okay,
thanks for the program note.
So he stops complaining about it. He's always
so needy.
He's very needy.
He's
a lot of attention.
He's such a chick sometimes.
Chuck in Delavan to close it out.
Holy smokes, I can't believe I got through. Hey, that guy that had to move to whiskey, I got one better. I wrote, who moved my crystal meth? Hey, they got the big ice festival in Lake Geneva this weekend. Yeah. Walk around, hold hands, bring the kids, put your long underwear on. I always put Big Mama pantyhose on top of them to keep my legs warm and everything.
Smart.
Stop over to Bottle Shop and see the smartest girl in Wisconsin. She's got black curly hair. That's my girlfriend.
I know, she's beautiful.
And say hi.
She's gorgeous. You guys are a cute couple.
Thank you.
Chuck,
you guys have a great weekend.
You too at the Ice Fest.
Chuck,
yeah.
I'm going to pass. It's a little brisk out there. It's one of those days you walk outside and you literally lose your breath.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.